All right, you ready for this?
Ready.
This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to the Device Talks weekly podcast. We have a short and simple podcast episode for you this week. I'm going to be running the conversation that I had and really enjoyed having with Elizabeth McCombs, Beth McCombs. She's Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at BD, and she was our opening keynote at Device Talks Boston on May 1st. Great opening to the discussion. We talked about her path into medtech, about the challenges that are facing medtech engineers, and about how BD is using its three pillars, really exploring its three pillars to expand its reach into the medical device industry. So lots going on at BD. Really, really great conversation. And it was just a fun talk. And again, a nice way to open up what was an excellent 2 days. I hope you joined us there at Device Talks Boston. It was our biggest one yet. We had over 1,400 people, and just gets better and better and better. The MedTech Innovator Investor Forum was a huge hit, and I thought brought a lot of great energy. So many great presentations by our sponsors, and our expo floor was just absolutely buzzing. We had our engineering forum down there. We had a recording studio down there where we recorded a number of interviews, and we'll be sending those out to you shortly and hosting it on our devicetalks.com website. So lots of information still coming out from Device Talks Boston. If you were there, we had a photographer there taking photos over the 2 days. And if you want to take a look, I actually have a LinkedIn post where I posted one of my photos. And I put a link in the comment section as to allow you to go take a look. See if you can find a photo of yourself. If you do, please share it. And of course, use hashtag DTBoston2024 so we can keep track of your posts. Make sure we'll like it and share it as well. So before I begin this conversation that I had with Beth McCombs of BD, a few points of business. We resumed Device Talks Tuesdays this week. We had a great start, and we'll be back again next week. We've got the Neuroscience of Selling brought to you by Integrity Solutions. So you can go to devicetalks.com to register for that. My colleague Daniel Kirsch is compiling information about medical device companies. If you want to be part of it or have your company be part of this survey and this list of major medical device players, find Danielle on LinkedIn. Danielle, K-I-R-S-H. There's no C in there. K-I-R-S-H. She's senior editor here at Mass Device, and she is putting together this project for our Medical Design and Outsourcing magazine. And very simple for you to get your company involved. But again, the easiest way, and I'll put a link in the show notes as well, easiest way to find out about the survey is to find Danielle on LinkedIn. And finally, we're releasing a new podcast next week. It is called Device Talks AI. Kayleen Brown is hosting it. And I won't say anything more, but if you're a subscriber to the Device Talks Podcast Network, you'll be receiving Device Talks AI. So Kayleen has really, really immersed herself in the intersection of medical devices and artificial intelligence. She's going beyond the buzz and really talking to people who are making a difference and using AI to make a difference. She led a fantastic panel at Device Talks Boston. If you were there, I'm sure you enjoyed it. If you were there and didn't have an opportunity to sit in on it because we had a lot going on, we'll be sending out audio from our sessions in just probably a week or two. So if you attended, you'll be getting that audio sent to you because it's a thank you. We know there's a lot going on. I've had a few complaints from people saying there's too many good sessions, and I hear the complaint, but it's not a problem I'm looking to solve. I want to give you more difficult choices when you come to our Device Talks meetings. I want it to be an abundance of great conversations, an overabundance of great conversations. That's my goal. That's my objective, And according to some, at least, we met that. So very happy to hear that. And all right, I will not talk anymore except for my conversation with Beth McCombs again. She is Chief Technology Officer and Executive Vice President at BD. But of course, before we begin this interview, I want to bring in our sponsor, MTD Micromolding. We wouldn't be putting out this podcast episode without their support. So I'm very happy to be speaking with the CEO of MTD Micromolding, Gary Hulecki. Gary, can you tell us about MTD Micromolding?
Sure. We are a 100% micromedical device manufacturer. Specializes in selecting micromaterials, optimizing part design, tooling, micromolding, metrology, also assembly and packaging. Everything is assembled and made in a Class 8 clean room. All our services are under one roof. We've been in business for 52 years now, and we have some ISO certifications. We have a 13485, 15378. ISO 9001, and we're also FDA registered to do final pack and ship to the Sterilite.
Well, that's a great introduction, Gary. If you want to find out more about MTD Micromolding, you can go to its website, mtdmicromolding.com, or you can look at the show notes for this podcast episode on our devicetalks.com website. There's a QR code just take a little picture of that with your cell phone. You don't have to take the picture. Just aim the camera at it, take it right to the website, and give you some really great information. So we'll hear a little more from our sponsor just a bit later in this podcast. Now, without any further delay, I'd like to begin our interview, or the interview I did with Elizabeth McCombs at Device Talks Boston. She was our opening keynote. Elizabeth McCombs is the Executive Vice President and Chief Technology Officer at Becton Dickinson. In that role, she's responsible for leading all R&D activities for BD. She also advances new product information and development from early stage concepts through launch. So we'll talk a lot about that, about her role, about how she got there, and about where BD is headed in the future. Great. Well, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Tom. It's great to be here and appreciate everything you do for our industry, and great to see familiar faces and new faces out in the audience today.
Did Tom Poland give you any tips? He was our opening keynote last.
Yeah, Tom did a great job. I listened to the podcast, and yeah, so looking to maintain that standard for BD.
I'm sure you will. Well, we started off that conversation just like we'll start off this one. I always love to learn about folks' path into MedTech, how they, what drew them here. What was it about MedTech that appealed to you to build a career on?
Sure. You know, for me, the draw toward med tech came very early in my life. So my father is an engineer. My mother is a nurse. So my father is an electrical engineer, gave me a lot of early circuits to work on, you know, firing up LEDs, getting annoying speaker sounds, and kind of, you know, learning engineering from the ground up. I graduated to turtle robots and things like that.
Do you miss Radio Shack?
Yes, Radio Shack was a fun place to be. Yeah, that now it's these snap circuits that my kids have. It's much more plug and play than it used to be. So you know, got that early exposure to engineering, and then my mother, as a nurse, started off in the hospitals, but then really evolved as a visiting nurse focused on rehabilitation. And I was talking to her recently about why she chose that path toward home care. And she was sharing with me the opportunity to see patients in their environment and have the full context of their experience really allowed her to deliver better care and better outcomes. And so I think with that early exposure of engineering and clinical, it was a no-brainer for me to be in med tech and to bring capabilities in math, science, and engineering to healthcare. And looking back over the last 25 years of my career, it's just been a privilege to be able to come to work every day and work to make healthcare better. And I'm sure all of us in the audience, you know, had a lot of options. And, oh, hey, Carolyn, I just saw you. Great to see you. You know, have had the opportunity to choose any industry, and the opportunity for us to work closely on healthcare that's so aligned to my purpose and all of our purpose. It's just really been a privilege to be part of this organization and this industry.
That's interesting, the home healthcare part. Yeah, I've normally heard nurses or doctors, but it's, I think, appropriate that that your initial interest kind of came from, that helping patients where they are.
Absolutely. And we'll talk about that. Yeah. One of the areas that we're focused on innovation at BD is how we help drive the decentralization of healthcare, you know, both from a patient experience and satisfaction as well as from a cost perspective.
Yeah, that's called foreshadowing.
Yeah. I was
giving a little hint of what's to come.
Right.
So, going into your career, did you see yourself as an engineer? Did you have any interest at all in being in healthcare in general, or you always wanted to play with circuits and fix and build things?
It's interesting. I did have a little bit of a kind of reckoning of, do I want to be a physician or do I want to be an engineer, and always thinking there could be the science and technical aspects with the patient, but really steered toward med tech innovation with the opportunity that the work that we do can really touch millions of lives, you know, the designs that we create. And so that's really what drew me. And I also do like to kind of tinker with the technical stuff.
That's great.
Yeah.
So how did you set your med tech career? You ultimately landed initially at J&J. How did you arrive there? But were there some steps before that brought you there?
Yeah. So I was finishing up my master's at MIT in mechanical engineering, and I went to a career fair. I didn't know that Johnson & Johnson had medical devices, but learned very quickly about Ethicon endosurgery and the shift that Ethicon had driven to minimally invasive surgery. So I was really interested and hooked on that. My first job was as a design engineer on the Mammatome breast biopsy platform. So now that's part of Danaher's portfolio. But I really had to pinch myself as a new grad, being able to work, on breast cancer diagnostics and, really the opportunity to contribute to women's health as well was very exciting. So, before that, I had done some internships at, with Guidon and back when Pfizer had, med tech companies. So always, interested in that field. And it's just been amazing to learn from all the different big players in our industry and bring best practices, to those new experiences.
What are the secrets that you give to young people about thriving in a big company? I've talked to many people who go big and then they go small. They like to have both. They like to have that variety. What is it? How is it best to build a career if you're remaining at a big company?
Yeah, I think some of the advice I give, and I think what maybe differentiated for me early in my career was first just really knowing the customer and the clinical state almost as well as the customers. So really embedding and understanding the clinical needs, because I think it's easy in a big company to kind of get internally focused and get caught up in the technology. But then when we really take the time to define an important need and then solve it, like that's really where the success comes. So I think being very customer centric first and knowledgeable about the clinical state. And then I think a lot of times, we can maybe get ahead of ourselves with our career and thinking about like what's the next step. But to me, it's been very consciously focusing on the role that I have and, being delivering results, being as, rigorous and excellent as I can be in that role. And then with that, your results will be noticed and then being open to new opportunities. And in a lot of cases, there were my leaders who really, saw the work that I was doing and then kind of pulled me along maybe faster than I was ready to move. But I kind of took that leap of faith and with their sponsorship and guidance and kind of confidence in me to be able to take on those new challenges. I think it's important to step out of our comfort zone. I was a technical leader. And when I was coming back from maternity leave with my first daughter, who's now 19, by the way, and studying engineering as a freshman, so couldn't be prouder of her. But coming back when she was a baby, coming to work, a couple of my sponsors, Martin Madden, who you may know is a big leader within med tech for Johnson & Johnson, really saw the opportunity for me to step into more of a project leadership role and cross-functional team leadership, which you could imagine certain leaders might say, hey, maybe it's time for her to take a break, but it was really more of an acceleration opportunity for me. I got to work on external innovation. I actually took a step out for a couple years at J&J to work on strategy and new business development, setting up new growth platforms in robotics, which I know is a hot topic, as always, in our industry, interventional oncology. So just kind of getting out of the comfort zone and building the toolbox and skill set to be able to continue to contribute.
I want to explore the how you get access to the clinical setting or how you get understanding of it first, but if you don't mind, I'm a journalist journalism degree. My son is an engineering freshman as well, so I had zero role in that whatsoever, other than my telling him, don't you dare get a journalism degree. Did you encourage your daughter? Did it come to her naturally to be in engineering?
Yeah, it's interesting. So initially, I saw that she would be a great engineer because she's great in math and science and very spatially. You know, can I see how things fit together? But then I realized in middle school I needed to back off and not encourage that. You know, so she was like, no, I'm going to do science, and then she wanted to be a surgeon, and then she came back around and said, yeah, actually, Mom, I think it is engineering. So I think it's just seeing the potential, planting the seeds, being an example, but then letting her find it.
So did being at J&J, being in a larger company, did that give you greater access to patient settings to get that understanding that you felt you need? I think it's a great point that you really need to, because it always sounds great when you folks are describing something to me, and then when my parents were still around, I would kind of see how they would implement what device companies had created, and it's like, mm-hmm. oh goodness, it's not
totally different.
There's a disconnect. So how did you have greater access to sort of understanding patients and how they use devices?
Yeah,
at a company like J&J?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, if you just have to, get out there. I think at J&J or as a startup company, I think in general, clinicians like to be around engineers and scientists who are problem solvers and be able to share the needs and help, drive innovation to make things better. So I think there's a natural affinity to scientists and engineers, being close to the customer. I will say, I think over the last 25 years, it is getting harder to get access in hospitals where it used to be easy to kind of go into an OR. There's a lot more credentialing and limitations, which is fair from, making sure the environment is safe. So we, at BD, we have, partnerships with certain clinical settings, where we train our engineers and scientists to be ready to go out and understanding sterile field is, ceiling to floor and not to cross the lines and all those things. Also getting our in-house clinicians to share, more about the disease state, so that they, when they're out, they can ask better questions and learn. But it really, I think, it's paramount for us to be in the field. COVID obviously put some limitations on that as well. But the teams that are closest to the customer are the ones that are the most successful.
Do engineers in general, maybe not those just at BD, but to your point, do they have a harder time getting into the clinical field? And do you see that impacting their work at all or innovation if they don't have that same level of access that perhaps they once did?
Yeah, I think it's, for us, again, it's more augmenting with the clinical expertise that we have in-house first,
right,
and then being selective about how we get out. But I think we can do more strategic, proactive partnerships today, whereas before it might have been more informal. I think if we can set it up well with the hospital system, it doesn't limit, our access, but we have to be more intentional about it. Yeah.
So finally, I just want to cover your move to BD from J&J. That's always an exciting change to leave a company that has been part of your life for so long to move on to someplace else. What went into that decision? And just take us a little bit into your thought process. How easy or hard a decision was that to make?
Yeah. So it was back in 2019. It was then John DeFord, who was the CTO for BD, gave me a call and was recruiting me for the medical segment role. So that's about half of BD's business focused on medication delivery, medication management. And, I think BD is actually a well-kept secret within med tech. I thought of it primarily as, the 125-year-old company and all of the, kind of syringes, catheters, which are very much the backbone of healthcare. But when I spent time with John, I really learned about the transformative M&A that the company has done over the last decade, both with CareFusion as well as Bard. And in particular, what I was drawn to is the footprint of digital and connected products that BD has. And that's really, at that time, where I wanted to spend the next decade of my career, is bringing digital technology and analytics and solutions to make healthcare more efficient and more personalized for patients. And so when I learned about BD having over 3 million connected products, in the U.S. being connected to over 70% of hospital EMRs, I was like, hey, this is a real foundation for us to build upon and help. And foreshadowing again on the connected care that we'll talk about as a key thrust of BD innovation.
No, that's amazing. And again, the decision just to leave a company where you're at and have been at and have comfortable and you know where the coffee maker is and all that.
Yes.
What goes into that?
Yeah, it was actually, 20 years with the company. You know, I really have a lot of connect. I saw Julia earlier today and Carolyn, all these amazing people that I've had the pleasure and privilege to work with. I overestimated how challenging it would be to break into a new company. BD really has a very similar value system, very focused on the patient. I think just the boldness of our CEO, Tom Polen, and driving innovation and changing the portfolio up, it's been very supportive and a pretty natural transition, but I always have a special place in my heart for J&J and does great things for patients.
Of course. So, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you gave us a little bit of the sense of BD's size and scope. And I've had conversations with others who have really made me aware, like you, when I first think about BD, I was thinking about plastic stuff. give us a sense of the footprint that you have in the healthcare setting.
Sure. So, BD is a 125-year-old company. We actually ship over 34 billion devices, every year. So the magnitude of that is like nothing I've experienced before. And visiting some of our manufacturing sites and the level of automation and design for cost, it's really next level.
That's what, like six devices for every
per
person
patient,
in the world?
Yeah. exactly. And so that's, really the foundation of BD. And we have, a very broad footprint now across discovery, diagnostics, and delivery of care. So in the discovery realm, we develop instrumentation for research and really advancing drug discovery and understanding of underlying disease, especially in immunology and oncology. So our flow cytometry business, flow cytometers are really like the workhorse of cell analysis. So we actually are leaders in that space and have been for the last 50 years. And then in the diagnostics realm, we have capabilities around clinical microbiology, molecular diagnostics, collection, so all the blood collection tubes when you go to get your cholesterol testing, BD is there. And then in the delivery of care, we have medication management, so really end-to-end from the pharmacy all the way to the bedside and even now to the retail pharmacy and home settings is where we're thinking about and delivering the best technology for drugs. And then finally, our interventional with peripheral intervention, surgery, and urology and temperature management.
Do you see all that and just think, I want a sensor in everything?
Right, exactly. Well, and that's the interesting thing. Like we sometimes talk about BD really being that backbone of healthcare and how many patients that we are, touching and how do we kind of think about connected care and moving from the backbone to maybe being the central nervous system, and connecting all of that data to enable better workflows and better personalization of care. So that's really, our portfolio today is tremendous. And, I've been, again, in the industry 25 years. Over the last just under 5 years at BD, the products that I'm working on and responsible are actually impacting myself and my family multiple times a year. So when I think about my health screenings, my family's vaccinations, my mother post-op having a procedure and being on the BD Alaris pump, which, the nurses told her was the best one around, it really is a source of pride, to see BD products in the room and confidence, in the quality and the impact that we're having.
All right, it's time to take a break from our conversation with Beth McCombs of BD. Once again, I'd like to bring in our sponsor, MTD Micromolding. I'm speaking with CEO Gary Hulecki. Gary, tell me, how does MTD work with medical device companies?
Yeah, sure. We'd like to get started as early as possible with our robust DFM process, where the mold designer works with the product designer on the OEM and also our R&D engineer internally here at MTD to, come up with the robust part design, material selection. This process allows us to take on the most complex projects, which is actually, a metric that we track. So each year we have about, 20% of rescue projects and about 30% of the projects we take on are no quotes by others in the industry.
And Gary, what are some of those projects?
The types of projects we typically work on are complex bioabsorbable parts or even some overmolding where encapsulation is important. Also some high aspect ratio parts. Our goal is to be the expert problem solvers for our customers on their micro projects.
Gary, I know MTD Micromolding has a reputation for stepping in and saving projects. Do you have any examples, any case studies that you can share with our listeners?
Sure. You know, one that sticks to mind was a bioabsorbable clip component where the customer spent about 5 years with limited success with another molding partner that wasn't an expert in bioabsorbables. So when we got involved, the clip overall needed to be in a U-shape. And they were molding it flat and had a process where they were bending the clip, which was creating issues with the IV loss, consistency, and also cracking of the parts. So MTD built a tool that we used to kind of create the part in a U-shape, which is really what they wanted ultimately as the finished device. After we created the tooling, we got the product validated and meeting their drawing in probably 2 months.
Well, that's a great example, Gary. Let's talk a little more about MTD and new services you're offering. What are some new services that you're able to provide to your customers?
Yeah, what's been pretty popular lately is the overmolding of smart devices, which are allowed to be implanted in the body. Typically, batteries, ferrite cores found in electronics cannot be implanted. But with our encapsulation process in an implant-grade material, allows them to be implanted into the body. Traditionally, it would be, you know, potted in an epoxy, which is kind of inconsistent and a very low yield. So our micro overmolding solutions produce better quality, a better unit costs for our customers. So it's an exciting new service that we've added.
All right. Well, that's great stuff. Final question, Gary. How do you see the industry changing in the future?
Well, I mean, we see right now the devices continue to get smaller, smarter, you know, more connected, which kind of requires more advanced components and implants in terms of geometry and materials for overmolding. Our customers now are, you know, they used to ask for, we need it to be soft, or we need it to be class six, or we need it to be rigid. Now we're talking about, you know, the thermoconductivity values, resorption times on bioabsorbables are more specific, things like dynamic environments, like heat, electricity, fluid dynamics, farmer compatible with chemicals. That's what we see, you know, the kind of the material selection process has become way more complex than it used to. So our goal is to be your single source strategic partner for these types of complex connected devices. So if you have a project that you're working on or struggling with, reach out to our website. We would love to talk more about them.
All right. Well, that's great, Gary. Thanks again for sponsoring this episode of Device Talks Weekly. You can find out more information about MTD Micromolding at its website, mtdmicromolding.com. Once again, you can also go to our website, devicetalks.com, find the podcast episode, and we'll have a link of this on our webpage, and you'll find a QR code there. Scan the QR code with your phone, and it'll take you right to some really helpful information on mtdmicromolding.com. So thanks again to MTD Micromolding for sponsoring this episode. Now let's resume my conversation with Beth McCombs of BD, the conversation we held at Device Talks Boston just a few weeks ago. So let's talk about the you've got your three pillars.
Yes.
that you're focusing on. Mm-hmm. At BD. Let's talk about, we'll just lay them out: smart connected care, shift to non-traditional settings. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. Yeah. Or spoil it. Spoiler for everyone, but and care for chronic people with chronic illnesses. So, mm-hmm. Smart connected care. Let's sort of tackle that first. We're hitting upon it already, but dig a little deeper into that. What does that mean? I joke about having sensors everywhere,
right?
And I think that's what people think about when they think connected care. But what goes? How are you exploring achieving that goal?
Yep. Yeah. So the places today where we have the greatest footprint for connectivity is in that medication management in the hospital in particular. So from the pharmacy all the way to the bedside, you think about Pyxis cabinets to really manage the chain of custody around the medications, as well as our connected infusion pumps. that do provide interoperability and even information around, you know, the drug library for the hospital, and providing guardrails to ensure or help ensure safe delivery of medications. So that's an area where we're very interested in taking it to the next level with more modern cloud-first architecture, where we can drive more just-in-time, you know, updates and cybersecurity patches, but at the same time access all of the data to be able to drive more simplicity of workflows and you know, simplification of patient medication management. So that's one area in particular that we see a lot of opportunity.
How transformative is that to not only the products but to the culture? I mean, this is a completely different, whole new layer of technology relying upon an existing infrastructure. Is it transforming? But how is it transforming everything? And what is that process like to bring this type of technology into what BD had previously been doing?
Yeah. So the good news here is that we do have a lot of legacy capability in software and connectivity. I mentioned, being connected to 70% of hospital EMRs. We have remote service capability as well. The challenge has been that a lot of those platforms have been built more in an on-prem, mindset. And also we have a number of connectivity platforms through both our organic as well as acquisitions that we've made. And so it is a cultural shift to get toward, okay, what is like one platform that we can have interoperability across all of BD products and driving convergence toward that. So it is a bit of a culture shift, and we'll talk a little bit about how we manage innovation at BD. Generally, we're very decentralized, but this is one area where we bring together all the software leaders, our central software engineering team, and the architects across the businesses to say, like, how do we converge all in the name of driving more secure, reliable software, driving, the opportunity for advanced analytics that I think will really help us move the needle from kind of base connectivity and interoperability to more, smart assistance for our healthcare providers.
So let's talk about give us an overview of the move to the non-traditional setting. We kind of referred to this before. What is meant by that? And maybe that was my notes, but what is your envisioning? What are you envisioning here BD doing and moving care out of the traditional hospital settings?
Yeah. So BD has a very strong presence in the acute care, large hospital systems, but we are definitely seeing a desire in a lot of leading healthcare systems as well as new models to shift, outside of that acute care setting. You can think about ambulatory surgery centers, infusion clinics, and even, long-term care and retail in the home. So those are all areas actually where BD has solutions for today. And with us being that backbone of healthcare, I think we need to move that backbone to where, patients are and where they want to be treated. So just one example of that in our urology and critical care business is the PureWick technology. So this is an alternative to, a traditional Foley catheter for urine management in the hospital. So an external catheter. We have a version for female anatomy. We recently launched an updated technology for male anatomy as well. It's been very successful in the acute setting, but we recognize the opportunity around incontinence in the home, and we're actually seeing, tremendous growth and interest to be able to use these technologies to bring more dignity, comfort, and independence for people dealing with urinary incontinence in the home. So that's a big thrust of our innovation and how we're driving our products commercially as well.
Great. And the care for people with chronic illness, what does that look like?
Yeah. So for chronic illness, certainly our the biosciences business with the flow cytometry portfolio that I mentioned is a big enabler of discovery as well as clinical diagnostics for chronic diseases like in the immunology, oncology, and even infectious disease space. We're also very excited about the portfolio we have for peripheral vascular disease in our peripheral intervention business. We've really built out our venous portfolio through a combination of organic and inorganic innovation, and arterial as well. And that team, we talked about being close to the customer, has a very deep understanding of the disease state and is really developing some exciting new innovations, both stents for venous and arterial applications, as well as a next-gen drug-coated balloon that we've just completed our pilot trial with a new sirolimus formulation. So a lot of great material science, just science and engineering together to bring better solutions where patients are still, very, underserved, especially in the venous space.
Did you have a balloon before? I'm trying to remember now.
Yep, we do have a paclitaxel balloon. Course, yep. And then, we're working on a next gen.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay, great. So let's talk about managing innovation at BD. So we referenced it before, how many different businesses you have, how many different products you have, from blood draw to balloons. How do you oversee, or how does your group sort of have these entities working forward parallel tracks, but still working together in some form of strategy?
Yeah, so I do think the formula for success in medtech in a big company is to be as decentralized as possible and have that center of gravity at the business unit level, because that's where you're very close to the customer, close to the core technologies, and you can really innovate and ensure we have the right solutions. At the same time, about 4 years ago when Tom came into the role of CEO, and I was involved with setting that broad portfolio strategy for BD and how we will innovate in our durable core, but we will definitely push ourselves in these transformative areas that we just discussed. And so really guiding the businesses to, how to think about those trends and the applicability of their portfolio to meet, where healthcare is going. So we definitely have twice a year portfolio reviews where we really, talk through those portfolio choices and business led, but then, we kind of think about holistically, where we want to fund across the company. I think the other role of corporate, I mentioned from a connectivity perspective, how do we bring everything together and simplify things for our customers? That's one area where we're more involved at the corporate level. Another is in the design for sustainability and the need for us to continue to innovate for clinical needs, but at the same time, how do we minimize our carbon footprint, our environmental impact? So that's an area where 2 years ago, in one of our corporate centers of excellence, we set up the Sustainable Medical Technology Group. So this is a dedicated team that's really working with our businesses to identify opportunities around design for sustainability. We're actually launching a guide to the organization this year that contemplates, packaging design, software and how you design for energy management, with some of our, instruments to minimize footprint, getting into circular solutions. And we actually had three pilots that we've talked about, in the past in the United States, as well as in Denmark and Brazil, where we've experimented with circular economy models and been able to recycle our, syringes and sharps, vacutainer tubes for blood collection, flush syringes, and actually use that material to, for downcycle applications. So those are just that's one area where, we're kind of leaning in and supporting the businesses in that transition.
How does the move towards sustainability, and we'll be talking about it tomorrow as well, many companies are working on this, how does this impact product design? Does it make it harder because you have to look at things differently?
Yeah, it definitely makes it harder. I also see it as whenever there's a new kind of problem that we need to solve, it's a call to action. It's exciting for our innovators to think about like what choices can I make. Certainly from a material selection perspective, there's limitations when you're talking about patient contact or drug contact, so it can be difficult to to be able to change materials on a dime with all of the regulatory constraints. At the same time, there's other very low-hanging fruit around package design, especially like tertiary or secondary packaging that maybe we didn't think about as much from a lens of sustainability. Mm-hmm. We have a big effort across all of BD where we're very much focused on improving the cost of our products to better serve our customers economically and really integrating the sustainability lens into that, because a lot of times the less material you use helps both on the cost and the environmental side. But we have to be very thoughtful about all of the ways that our products are used and make sure we don't go too far, always maintaining clinical safety and clinical benefit at the center of the decisions that we make.
Is that typical to have costs kind of considered at that stage of product design?
In the early stage?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what I was mentioning was a lot on our current portfolio and how we can continue to optimize cost, but at the same time, I think it is a shift for us as a company over the last few years. I mean, always clinical benefit is front and center. Time to market is very important. I think we're being more disciplined around the cost decisions because 80% of the cost of a design is kind of baked in, in that original architecture.
Sure.
So I think it's important for us to be intentional and thoughtful about the price of the product that will that customers are willing to pay, and ensuring that we're doing the right engineering and design to value to be able to sustain.
And when you're doing your early stage innovation, what different voices and forces are you bringing into that conversation, other than just the engineers?
Yeah. So I think of the front end innovation as the triad of the medical expertise, the technical expertise, and the market expertise. And those are really the three main players that we have together at the front end that are really spending time in the clinical environment, understanding the customer need, evaluating concepts, and then developing the business case and the development plan to take it forward. So I say those three are most critical. And we definitely are leaning more into a fail fast and pivot mindset at BD with our innovation. So staying very close to the customer insight, focusing on killer questions. And I see Tesh in the audience. His team is driving killer questions. but we both like killer questions. It's like, in the front end, there's so many things that can derail a project, but let's pick the top three that if it's the answer is no, we can just stop and move on. But if it's a yes, then you've really got something. It's this idea of like, I'm going to fall in love with my idea and then I'm going to try to kill it. Mm-hmm. And if it survives, then you really have something. And then having these quick learning loops with customers to test and learn. So that's a big focus we have is that agility and velocity in the front end so that we can then ferret out the best ideas and get those into new product development as quickly as possible.
I want to just dive a little deeper in connected care and where the opportunities are there, because it's sort of a buzzword, and I think a lot of people say it and put it in press releases, and I think I know what it means, but what does it mean to you, and where are those opportunities that BD is exploring?
Yeah, so I think if we look at where healthcare is today, healthcare worker shortages, burnout, inflation, and the cost pressures. I think in the past, maybe we were focusing connected care more on we've got to drive this completely differentiated clinical outcome. Mm-hmm. But I think there's lower hanging fruit in really understanding the workflows and where there's waste, where there's nuisance errors, that nurses are having to respond to and taking their attention, away from the patient. And so I think that's really where we see the most near-term opportunity is in those workflows and getting the right care for the patient as quickly as possible and minimizing all the noise and distraction. I think the other opportunity is just around records and we know how much time clinicians are spending their evenings documenting cases, and that's where we're really excited about what Gen AI could do of just kind of passively listening to a conversation or a procedure, and then building a first draft document that then just could be edited. So I think there's a lot of those types of areas where there's more rote activity that we can take care of with technology, and then allow healthcare providers to spend the time and really personalizing their focus on the patient.
Do you see AI applications beyond that?
Yeah, I mean, so we're definitely very excited about what generative AI can do in healthcare, and I think also there's so much opportunity on the more discriminative AI. That's probably more the near term is really looking at images and data sets and being able to discern and pull the signal out of the noise. That's one area where BD and our microbiology platform, we have an AI tool that looks at so the plate growth, so on the auger plates and looking for bacterial growth to be able to triage, like if there's a no growth situation, then the microbiologist doesn't really need to spend time looking as closely at those plates, but then can focus on getting the samples where there is growth and get the susceptibility testing as quickly as possible. So those are, you know, applications. I think in med tech, imaging is probably the furthest along because it's a more clean data set to be able to analyze. But with all the natural language processing and tools coming to the forefront, I think there's a lot more in the noisy clinical environment that's going to be possible in the near term.
Are you building an internal, have you built an internal AI team, or where do you get that expertise from?
Yeah, well, Amir is here from BD. He's helping us build out our data science capabilities and driving actually a hackathon that we're having later this month. And really looking at the data sets we have access to and building solutions that will take advantage of AI. So we do have pockets of capability, and that's an area that I'm very focused on. It's really software, cybersecurity, and data science are the areas that, you know, really want to build out, both organically as well as from a partnership perspective. And I know there were a lot of people that emailed me coming to this meeting who are in that, you know, field. I look forward to kind of catching up and learning more about the capabilities of partners that we can work with as well.
Great. So. And just the final question, this seems like a very pivotal time for BD. How do you see this company transforming over the next 5 years or so?
Yeah, I'm really excited to look back in 2030 at where we are. If I look back over the last 5 years, we, with the greater focus in the portfolio and the higher ambition, we've been able to focus and drive a doubling of our incremental new product revenue over the last 5 years. So really excited about the impact that we've built, you know, through a more intentional portfolio strategy. And I just see in the next 5 years a lot coming to the fruition of what we just talked about. We'll have, we're working on a completely new medication management kind of end-to-end hardware and software platforms that I think will enable that next round of analytical capability. Having our full biosciences portfolio coming to the forefront, even more innovation for new care settings. We have wearable pharmaceutical delivery devices and PureWick and all of that. So I think there's just going to be a lot of continued transformation as we're investing 60% of organic R&D and 80 to 90% of M&A in those spaces. It's going to be really exciting to continue to innovate. And it's really, I just am humble and proud to be a part of this industry and BD that is continuing to see opportunity for innovation in healthcare.
That's great. And just, you mentioned robotics earlier. Is there a role for robotics at BD?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Tom likes to say we're actually the second largest robotics company in medtech because of our pharmacy automation. So second only to Intuitive, we have the robots for the retail pharmacy. So
that's
where we're primarily focused. And, we'll continue to look for opportunities around automation and robotics.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks again to MTD Micromolding for sponsoring this episode. We wouldn't be able to send it out to you without their support. In case you were wondering, Chris Neumarker will return to this podcast. We're just kind of getting our feet back under us. So Chris will be back. We're exploring a return of the Newsmakers. We may do it a bit differently. But if you have any thoughts on that and want to share them, please do so. Either connect with us on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn, Tom, S-A-L-E-M-I, or Chris Neumarker, Chris as in a Neumarker. He's on LinkedIn as well. He is the editor-in-chief of Mass Device. Connect with us. Let us know what you'd like to hear in that portion of the podcast where we're not interviewing medtech leaders. So excited to have Chris back. Once again, check out our Device Talks Tuesdays offering. It's coming up. Make sure you're subscribed to the Device Talks Podcast Network so you don't miss future episodes of Device Talks Weekly, our corporate podcast, and our new podcast, Device Talks AI, hosted by Managing Editor Kayleen Brown. She does a fantastic job with that, so you will not want to miss it. Finally, believe it or not, I am working on Device Talks West, which happens October 16th and 17th. No more information on that right now. I've got a few great speakers lined up, but we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. Let's see. I think that's it. All right, folks. Well, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Device Talks Weekly podcast. Looking forward to getting back into the swing of things. I did have an excellent week off last week. In case you're wondering why there was no podcast, took a nice drive home with my sons from Indiana, where I picked up my oldest from Purdue, and we stopped at Pittsburgh and Gettysburg, and great time together. So, but looking forward to bringing you more great content at devicetalks.com and through our Device Talks podcast network, through Device Talks Tuesdays, and of course, in person, October 16th and 17th at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Great. Take care, everybody. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week.